Good day to you. Today, our subject is joy again. Upside down joy today. That is to say, joy that comes in the way that most people would never dream of it doing so. I'm going to take you through a number of scenarios where I want you to imagine with me. I want you to imagine, first of all, applying for a job. What would you write about yourself? Imagine someone sending in their biodata like this. Oh, there's nothing really to recommend about me. I'm just sad about the whole situation. I really don't want to push my claims on the job, because to be honest, I haven't really got it all sorted yet, even though I wish that I had. I imagine you'd be unlikely to be called for an interview with that sort of biodata. And yet, as I read the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount, the words that Jesus spoke to introduce what discipleship was all about, he will probably turn to this person with this realistic but rather sad biodata and say, "You're just the sort of person I need." Because he begins the Beatitudes, his description of the sort of person that would be called lucky you, with these words: "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." It's as though he's saying, okay, you're at the end of your rope. You face up to the fact of who you are, warts and all, the areas where you've not got it right. You're not pushy. You're not constantly claiming that you've got it taped, that you're better than the average. Well, you can become an insider. An insider in the kingdom where God reigns. An insider in God's embrace, being comforted. An insider who is experiencing the provision of God. An insider who deep down is fulfilled and satisfied. As I read the Gospels, I'm interested. He's called the friend of sinners. They are the people who come to him and enjoy him. Those who can't escape that they haven't got it all taped. Those who are at the end of their rope. Indeed, when a rich man came to Jesus who got everything going for him, Jesus sighed and said to his disciples, "It's very difficult for people like that to enter the kingdom. It really is hard." Not, of course, that it's possible for anybody except by the grace of God. But you see, it is the grace of God that we need to receive. And we need to come with empty hands. As the people in the East Africa revival used to say, you've got to come down. That is the way up. That is the way to God. That is the way to God's blessings. That is the way to joy. The way to joy is being real about ourselves, that we are little, that we are vulnerable, that we come to God as beggars. The way to joy is the way of grace. But then I want you to imagine your community, You might want to think about this church, or you might well want to think about your neighborhood, our country, or even our messed up world, for we are today but a global village. What is said about our community? People are very critical these days, aren't they? Very unforgiving. We blame one another, we criticize one another. Just this week, I've heard two comments from neighbours of mine. One of them, I'm not in this forgive and forget stuff. And another, he's going to pay for what he did to me. We're not a forgiving community, very critical. People are not reliable, they can't be trusted. I had a phone call yesterday and it went on, and Rose came in and shouted at me, Dick, this is a scam. Somebody says, a workman says, I'll come on Thursday, so you cancel your appointments. You take time off work and he doesn't come. You talk to somebody and you think to yourself, what's he really after? People are not reliable. They're often not what they seem. And thirdly, people don't get on. Marriages break up. People can't be bothered with one another. Some of you at school have experienced frightening, depressing bullying, especially on your phones. The way of joy, says Jesus, is to make community work. Blessed are the merciful, they'll be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, they'll see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they'll be called children of God. He is telling his disciples that the way of joy is one of commitment to being merciful, to looking at the other point of view, to actually forgiving people, frighteningly costly though it sometimes is. The way of joy is to act with integrity, to deliver what you promise, to say what you mean, so that people know where they stand. The way of joy is a commitment to be a peacemaker, to help people, not to bear grudges, not to be part of the unforgiving, constantly critical world. It's as though Jesus is saying, lucky you if you're not sitting there waiting for a blessing, but committed to be a blessing. Jesus says, lucky you. Why? Because there are great spin-offs from this commitment to making community work. You'll find people are more tolerant of you. You'll show mercy, and certainly you will enjoy the forgiveness of God. You will see God at work, see God doing things, see God in the faces of people, see God in your life. And you'll be called the children of God. I was very moved as a Hindu neighbor yesterday described to me what Christians are like. And it was people for the community who together make community but extend community to others. And Jesus says, you will have joy, lucky you, because this is what we are meant to be. And yet, as he calls us to both this realism about ourselves and joy in that, and realism and real contribution to building community, which is all a reflection of our God, he he makes it clear that everything will not turn out nicely. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecutely and falsely say all kind of evil against you because of me. Blessed are you because you are persecuted because of righteousness. Rejoice and be glad. Jesus is saying, as it were, at the end of the list, I have not given you an opt-out clause so that for you everything is happy-clappy. For joy and pain go together. Problems, he says, will be there because of the way you live that challenges others. Problems will be there because people don't want Jesus, and if they don't want him, they won't want you either. And yet he says, lucky you when you're faced with these problems. Not because problems are fun. Not because somehow you don't feel the pain. But he says they do assure you you're on the right side and that God will reward you. And it is this assurance that is a source of joy in the midst of the pain. Now I want you to think in a slightly different direction and to imagine having a huge gospel impact here. Wouldn't that be amazing? I remember a friend of mine getting terribly excited when he realized that Jesus had said in the unlikely situation in which he was, the harvest is plentiful. There's lots of opportunity for change here, for deliverance here, for people to become Christians here. And so in that context, Luke chapter 10, Jesus sent out 72 people. And those people, I can imagine, would have had all sorts of worries. They didn't mind having a happy gathering with Jesus, but to be sent out into a world which Jesus was quite realistic about. He's sending you out, he says, as lambs amongst wolves. And he said, there'll be places that reject you and tell you to get out because they're not interested. But he says, I want you to go into these situations and try and make friends with people and heal the sick and tell them about Jesus and get them ready because I'm coming. I wonder how they would have felt about that. I wonder what you feel about doing that sort of thing. Jesus knew they'd be vulnerable. He told them to take a towel. It's always nice to have someone to back you up and someone on whose shoulder to cry. But what happened when they went out? In Luke 10 and verse 17, it says the 72 returned with joy and said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. They returned with joy because it worked, that Jesus had actually equipped them, however vulnerable they felt. They returned with the wonderful conviction that the worst evil that they could encounter was not as strong as Jesus. They had been pushed to dare beyond their comfort zone. And the experience had led them to joy. They had seen people changed. They'd seen people delivered. They'd seen people healed. They'd seen, more remarkable than that, they'd seen God use them. And Jesus himself expresses his joy in verse 21. At that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you've hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. You shared it with these little ones. You shared it with these ones who are down to earth about their need and their vulnerability. That's what you love to do, God. There is joy in discovering that, in moving out beyond our comfort zone, because we believe there is a harvest here in Glasgow. What a joy to discover that. Fourthly, I want you to imagine living as if God's promises work. In John chapter 16, Jesus made this extraordinary promise to his disciples. Until now, you've not asked for anything in my name. Ask and you will receive, and your joy will be complete. Jesus doesn't give us a simplistic view of prayer. He gave us a peep into Gethsemane, where he prayed for something terribly frightened to be taken away, and it wasn't. We are allowed to see him hanging on a cross and screaming those desolate words that the psalmist so often provides us for our prayers. My God, why have you forsaken me? And yet he also shows us thanking God after he'd called into the grave to Lazarus, come out, and he had. I thank you that you've heard me. I know that you hear me, but I want to say this publicly so that others will see that you heard me. You did this, God, in answer to prayer. And here he gives this promise in the context where he knows the disciples are going to face grief and problems and sadness. And he wants to reassure them that though it doesn't always look like that, that Jesus is the winner and that we are to learn to pray in his name because he has the clout to get things done. And he says, if you do it, your joy will be complete. Joy, you see, is ultimately the product of a life with God. Not a religious life so much as a sharing and doing and talking with a working God who does things. Prayer is a mystery and we have lots of questions. But it's promised here as a way to joy. I believe we need urgently together to learn to help one another to prove God in prayer. I remember when I was first in work, an agnostic saying to me of his experience of Christian prayer, they always used to pray in such a way as you'd never know if it was answered or not anyway. We need to help one another to really pray. And sometimes we will ask why afterwards. And sometimes we will not get what we when we want. And sometimes we will get Lazarus moments. We have to take the risk of a love relationship with God, a talking relationship with a God who works, and we need to help one another to that. May God help us to do it. Amen.